Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Prem Football Podcast with me, Hyrule, and a couple of our regular pundits. Would you guys like to be called pundits now or just regular guests?
Maestros, let's call ourselves maestros.
Okay, fine. Hatta like to be called maestros.
I just thought of a Malay word that sounds like pundit, which is not very nice.
Okay, never mind. No, that, listen, you won't save that for a different podcast. La. Hey guys, hey Hatta.
Hello, hello.
Hey, hi, Ewan.
And yeah, man. Hi, hi.
So I've got an idea this week. Ewan, you've got questions for both of us, considering we're fans of two clubs, which you have a lot of questions about.
I have questions for every club, man. Every club. I have questions for United, you know, but then we have no fans from United. I have questions
how about,
from,
do you have questions for Blackburn?
I have questions for myself after that 7-0 midweek loss to Fulham. I'm like, wow. But anyway, they won on the weekend, so that's good for them, 3-1. So, But, you know, hard to recover after a 7-0 drubbing, you know.
Jeez. How about I let you take over this episode?
Okay, at least for the Arsenal and United and the Liverpool questions, I'm happy to. And okay. Then, yeah, you know, I mean, I think just, you know, based on what we saw over the weekend for the Premier League, there's tons to talk about without even going into Spain or Italy or anything like that. Let's start with Liverpool, because that is the big result, right? West Ham beating Liverpool 3-2. I think on the surface of it, it might be surprising, but if you look at West Ham's form and their position on the table, you realize that, hey, wait a second, they're actually third on the table. And, you know, that win just took them to 23 points, 1 point above Liverpool. And they're equal on points with Manchester City. And both teams have 7 wins, 2 draws, and 2 losses. But, you know, I wanted to ask you about the match because I didn't watch the whole match. I saw the highlights and it looked like Liverpool sort of got bullied into a loss. But what is your opinion on it, Hyrule, as a Liverpool fan?
I think the early goal that they conceded sort of unsettled the team. The team seemed a bit unsettled as well because unlike last season where we had defensive injury issues, right? This season, we're suffering midfield injury issues. We had to play Henderson, Fabinho, and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in midfield. Not exactly the best of lineups, I would say, but you could see that they didn't have the zing or the energy that they normally would have in a game, right? Because I think most of it, they would probably have been, you know, exhausted. I wouldn't say exhausted, but not at 100%. You know, I'm sure if you guys play Football Manager, you know, after playing midweek, your players playing on a Saturday are definitely not
a bit. Yeah, the bar dips a bit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Definitely not 100%, especially after playing Atletico Madrid. Right, it wasn't the usual performance, and a lot has to be said by Liverpool fans, at least, about the two decisions that didn't really go their way. One was the first goal that they conceded, right? I think most Liverpool fans would agree that there was a foul by Obonna on Alisson because he, in our opinion, at least in my opinion, that he jumped back into Alisson.
Right.
Right.
I thought it looked pretty fair, actually. I didn't think that was a foul. I thought that the jump from the West Ham player looked legit. Like I wasn't trying to impede and I don't think there's much of an impeding there, but I guess, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a legit goal.
Yeah. No, to be fair, initially when I saw the goal in real time, it looked fine. Then when I saw the replay, I felt that Alisson was impeded. But after watching, you know, the entire highlights reel, I just felt that what's his name? Virgil van Dijk was really mad at the defense, especially every time they conceded or even when they let a shot in on goal. Because it was definitely a very high goal threat. And I think I felt that maybe they didn't do enough to protect the goalkeeper, which is weird because, you know, you think Liverpool's defense with Virgil van Dijk, you know, back and them having like 4 or 5 centre-backs now, right? And Trent Alexander-Arnold being there and Andy Robertson as well. They would be more than capable. But something happened there. Something, you know, tactically that West Ham did. I was just wondering if David Moyes told them to do that, especially when they have set pieces around, in and around the penalty, well, not independent, but around the penalty area, just to, you know, put pressure on Alisson, just to bully him a bit. Just to see
I don't think it's something new. I think it's if you've watched West Ham play this season, right, or even last season, that's something which they tend to be fond of doing, especially with Mikel Antonio being the beast up front that he is this season, right? And their defenders are quite massive defenders in Ogbonna and then Kurt Zuma as well, right? So it, playing that way works to their favor. That doesn't also go away from the fact that, you know, David Moyes has done a good job at West Ham. To me, I think the turning point has to be COVID. Because before COVID, right, you could see that the players, even David Moyes himself, were under a lot of pressure from the fans at the London Stadium. A lot of fans were saying, you know, this wasn't what they want from a West Ham team. They missed the atmosphere at Upton Park and all that, right? And then they were turning on the team. But having the fans out of the stadium allowed them to develop a lot more as a team. The players had more belief in what David Moyes wanted to do. So the past 18, 20 months, I think, is a godsend for David Moyes because it allowed him to stamp his authority, put his imprint on what he wants as a style on the players. And the players bought into it. And so that when they got the results last season, so that when the fans came back, right, all of them were behind the ship. Well, rather, we're behind the team. They were on board with on board of the West Ham ship, right? That's where they are now. You know, I think most teams will fear going to London Stadium now, with the atmosphere that they have at the stadium there. Hats off to David Moyes, lah. Although, you know, one has to mention, you know, where does this put his position with respect to how he was removed from the Man United post and what's going on at Old Trafford right now, right?
Okay, wait. Before the Liverpool fan deflects all attention and then just, you know, Tai Chi to Man United again, let's stay on the subject. Hata, I wanted to ask you, West Ham United, right? Last season, we were talking about them, right? Teams like them being, you know, Leicester City, being potential there or thereabouts, being potential title contenders or looking like it at least early in the season. Do you still think the team is still too thin for them to make a good step at challenging for the title?
Oh, title, yes, of course. But I think they're doing a pretty good job for the time being, you know, balancing their... I mean, it's only like close to a third of the season, right? And they're still keeping pace. And you would think that they would run out of steam after a very good season last year, and they're still going strong. They're well-oiled team, and they're kind of running well. I think they've got a bit of a Leicester energy, you know, Leicester from 2015, 2016, right, where they're pushing well and they're well drilled, but they also have momentum and they're just kind of staying on course with that momentum and focusing. In fact, I think this team it's not as talented as that Leicester team. You had like a peak Jamie Vardy, Riyad Mahrez, and all these guys who could be difference makers. West Ham has very good players, but no more of that kind of ceiling, right? That talent ceiling that Leicester have. I'm curious to see how far these guys can go because they're going really far by being compact and being just very solid, well drilled. Everyone follows the script. The script is a solid script. It's not amazing, but it's an effective script. And kudos to them. You know, this is what good organization and good coaching does for you. And I'm actually quite happy that David Moyes is getting some love after being in the wilderness for the last several years. A lot of people are saying, oh, you know, they shouldn't have let him go at United. I think that's nonsense. I think he should have been let go. 7 years is a long time in anyone's career. I mean, if you look back 7 years ago, are you the same person that you are right now? Are you the same person at work? No, you're very different, right? So I think kudos to him. You know, he was being pigeonholed with all these, for lack of a better word, privileged local white men coaches, right? Your Sam Allardyce, your Alan Pardews, who are not really innovators and who are Luddites and you know, men of the past who seem to get a free pass to always get this job. They're the privileged men, right? And for a while, I thought so too, right? He went to Sunderland, didn't do so well, not really all his fault. His first stint at West Ham was solid, but not spectacular. He kind of struggled at Real Sociedad as well. People forget that he went to Spain. Not a right culture fit.
That was very surprising.
Yes, yes.
And
I read a lot about his stint as well. So he took a lot of the same practices that he had at Everton and United and you know, old school, right? So he and his assistant would drive and scout, drive around Spain and try to scout all these teams. But he kind of forgot that Spain is a way, way, way bigger country than England, where you couldn't just drive from one city to another. So he had cultural struggles there, not just language-wise, but even these kind of practices, right? So in the last several years, he's kudos to him. You know, you say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but he has learned a lot. He has refined his coaching and his connection with the players and his style, and it is reaping rewards now. And a lot of people are laughing at him as well, right? Second stint with West Ham in what, two odd years or so, two, 3 years. And he thought he was an idiot. But I think Hyrule also made a very good point that luckily he had COVID. As in he had COVID, but
he did get COVID.
And his team was getting good results while he was actually quarantined at home. But luckily for him, due to COVID, you know, he didn't have the pressures of the fans who are very demanding, who have been unhappy with a lot of things. Even the ownership and management. So, those guys would have brought a bit of a negative energy down, but he was able to work in a bit of quiet and work without that pressure. And I'm just curious to see how far they can take this, how far they can take this forward. I think they can finish in a Europa League position again. I think they've got ability. And if they can, I think that's fantastic, because this means that they've been able to juggle this season's Europa League schedule on top of the league schedule to kind of maintain that space, that pace. So that's a very good season. And so far they're showing they can do really, really well. But let's see, we're only close to a third in, and that season's pretty long. So far, so good. Yeah.
They will be able to make the Champions League though?
Champions League, I think, might be tough. Because there's an Arsenal coming on for them. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy going for that fourth spot. But it is a bit of an open season, as you can see from the table. Conte's coming in with Spurs. That could be a kind of a dark horse for that spot as well. Everton was in there for a while. Leicester could Leicester have the talent. And don't forget Man United. for all the problems that they have, they've still got an amazing amount of talent. So that the kind of fourth spot, I think West Ham will have a dip. They're in good shape right now, but they would have a dip. The question is, can they stay the course to finish top six? And that fourth spot, I think there's just so many people fighting for that space right now. Looking at that fourth spot's, it's 22 points with Liverpool, right?
Yeah.
But not far from it, Arsenal 2 points away, Man United 5 points away. They could bounce back very easily.
I'm wondering if it's
Wolves and Spurs and Palace.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's just more feasible or more realistic for them to try to win the Europa League and get into the Champions League.
Yeah, they might have. It's not easy Arsenal's not in the Europa League at all.
No Arsenal, no Spurs.
So the path is clear.
But there are going to be lots of teams dropping in from Champions League, right? We might see maybe AC Milan come in. It's never easy. It's really, really never easy. Leipzig might be dropping in. Really good teams.
I think you're going to start asking questions of West Ham once they start getting injuries.
Yeah.
And the squad depth is one thing that has to be taken into account of. I mean, I'm not sure how deep their squad is. I've heard, I remember there were times where he brought less than the number of substitutes allowed, right?
Like Atletico Madrid against Liverpool.
Yeah. So I suppose we'll see the second half of the season, how they go. You know, qualifying for the Europa League is not a stretch for them. Anything more than that, then yeah, it's down to man management and luck, I guess.
Yeah, they're definitely good players. I mean, Mikel Antonio, yes, he's up front, but you know, they got Kurt Zouma in. Yeah. Don't forget. And
Suchek, yeah, of course.
Suchek's still playing. Jared Bowen's doing quite well.
Right.
Lanzini doesn't really look like an athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit stocky, but somehow he's bringing in the people forget that they have Fabianski, who's playing well. Areola, who's who's a World Cup winner, third choice, I know, but World Cup winner,
still World Cup winner,
still, right? So yeah, you know, I'm looking through the list right now. Pablo Fornal got talent, right? Declan Rice is having an excellent season. How long he can last, I don't know. Right. Ben Rama can play. It's a pretty thin squad, I have to say. So that's a challenge that they have to face. But if they can keep everyone fit and, you know, if the stars align for them, I think they can go far.
Right.
I now looking at the thin squad, maybe they might just drop out just outside, but they should then also throw the dice in for a good cup run. They're in the quarterfinals against Spurs for the EFL Cup, so that's a way into the Europa League. I think they can go far. They can go far and then push
the resources.
At the
same time, you know, the more competitions they play, the bigger squad they need, the increase in chance, in the likelihood of injuries as well. So I guess it's going to be a bit of a juggling act for David Moyes.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of teams in form, there's a certain other team from North London, not the Tottenham side of it, but the Arsenal side of it. 1-0 winners over Watford at home. Is it back to the days of 1-0 to the Arsenal again? Hata, are you seeing some sort of consistency here? Or what are we seeing with Arsenal? Because I think, you know, I think everyone's sort of kind of looking at, you know, the Liverpools and the Cities and the Uniteds and the Chelseas. So Arsenal's kind of, you know, the tension is, the spotlight is away from them at the moment. Is this maybe one of the reasons why they're doing well?
Possibly, you know, but I think they've been finding ways to, this is a very young team, I think easily the youngest team in the Premier League. But they've been finding ways to overcome adversity, Arsenal. So yeah, the old tropes about, oh, you know, when the going gets tough, they kind of struggle, but I think they're showing in small ways how they could really fight against adversity. Just look at the last two teams, last two games, you know, against Leicester, you know, they had to really push away a massive onslaught by Leicester City, which who are really, really talented, and they managed to kind of stick it through. Against Watford as well, it was a very scrappy game. Watford had a lot of rotational fouls on all the players, you know, very cynical fouls, and they kind of disrupted the flow. And yet, despite all of that, Arsenal scored that goal. Arsenal could have scored even two more goals if not for Aubameyang and you know, and his lack of finishing. Don't forget, he missed a penalty. He could have scored a goal, but he scuffed it and it landed on Saka's feet. And it was a very odd offside decision that went for him. Odegaard could have scored as well when he came on. But then Aubameyang just had to tap in at the far post. Then he realized that he was actually offside. So, you know, despite being disjointed, they are finding solutions. And they have played against some decent teams. I mean, now that you look back, Brighton, Crystal Palace, Leicester, especially Crystal Palace and Brighton, we didn't expect them to be this good, but Arsenal drew against them, despite being the weaker team in terms of performance. They showed, again, fighting against adversity in those last two games. They blitzed Aston Villa, who, granted, are not the best form right now. They played, you know, they won Burnley and Norwich without playing too well. So I think they're building good momentum, and this young team is learning and picking up the experience. And it's players like Emile Smith Rowe and Bukayo Saka who are coming in to carry that slack, right? So the back four looks really good. Plus Ramsdale 5.
Yeah.
They're looking really, really good.
Yeah.
No joke. I'm surprised how good they look.
three clean sheets in the last three games, so that's good.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
They've
gone unbeaten in the last 10 games across all competitions. Seven clean sheets,
eight wins, two draws.
Yeah, and this is with Kieran Tierney, who's been struggling with an injury and off a bit off form, and they brought in. They also brought in Nuno Tavares, who's a bit of a fun player to watch because he just takes the ball and he does all this crazy stuff from left back. You know, he's a bit of a raw player. You know, Thomas Partey didn't play yesterday. It was Maitland-Niles and Sambi Lokonga. So
I was going to ask you about that. What do you think about Maitland-Niles in midfield, center midfield?
Yeah, I think Arteta spoke to him about having to kind of, you know, just change his mindset a little bit, right? So he's been wanting to play in center midfield. We've talked about this, and he's been wanting to do it. I think one of the challenges with him is that he doesn't have that level of concentration. I think he's had to challenge himself to concentrate a lot more. His defensive game is really good. He's quite athletic. He's not bad on the ball as well. So, you know, it does feel like a throwback to the old school midfield too, that there's no dedicated DM, right? So everyone has to do a bit of both. I get that Maitland-Niles is slightly more defensive than Lokonga or Partey. But essentially, you know, they're quite jack of all trades. They can do a bit of everything. Mm. I hope he continues doing what he does. But you could see yesterday that none of them have Partey's, you know, elite passing skills and all that. But they managed to keep the game running and secure as well. So that's good. They were doing the basics well. They just look missing a bit of stardust, but I think this is where Maitland-Niles has to keep showing that he can perform this way. I think he was the Sky Sports man of the match, although my man of the match would have been one of the two central defenders, but they all played well. They all really, I think all of them were at least 7, 8 out of 10. All of them played well, yeah.
Right, which brings me to my favorite question of this whole, you know, two segments of questioning both of you all so far. Next Premier League match is Liverpool at home to Arsenal. How do you see this one going, Hyrule?
I'm quite confident of that, with it being at Anfield, and this would be after the international break, right? Barring any injuries that, you know, the players would have received from international duty. Hopefully, there won't be any delays of getting Alisson and Fabinho back from Brazil this time around. Fabinho is definitely out unless he makes a miraculous quick recovery from his hamstring injury. Yeah, I think they have about 2 weeks to put things right. They definitely want to, you know, set the record straight. Liverpool has to lose eventually after that, you know, 25-game unbeaten run. But I think they want to bounce back, especially with things being what it is, how they are at Anfield, the crowd back, right? So I'm quite confident about this one. Maybe 2-1 in Liverpool's favour.
What about you, Hatta? Do you think Hyrule is right? Is Arsenal's winning run going to be, or, you know, undefeated streak going to be brought to an end?
Oh, you know, I think Arsenal fans should not get too carried away, because this Liverpool team is really excellent. I think they will come back strong in this post international game. I would expect Arsenal to be competitive, but to win, I don't know. I think a win is a bonus. I would be happy with a draw. Yeah,
but
I think Arsenal look like they can be really competitive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What do you think, Liverpool? What do you think, Hyrule? Do you think Liverpool can take another game where the opponents are going to stay compact, they're going to try to compete, and they're going to, you know, just for 90 minutes, whether they're, you know, 2-0 up or whether they're down or whatever, they're just going to be chasing for every ball? Because you're right, you know, because watching the game against Atletico Madrid last week in the Champions League, I think they could have won by 4 or 5 or even, you know, 6 or whatever, but they just missed out on you know, a couple of offside decisions, right? And then there were maybe, you know, on another day there were a couple of other shots that would have landed in the back of the net, but they didn't. And Atletico Madrid just saw that little opening, you know, even though they had one guy sent off you know, midway through or like sometime in the first half, but after that they really just shut down. And I think Liverpool were trying to just put the game away. That's maybe where they ran themselves a bit ragged. What do you think? If Arsenal comes to Anfield and they start like playing like a like they, you know, similar formation that they played against Watford, where they play like a, almost a 4-5-1 almost.
I actually wouldn't mind if Arsenal be more expansive and attacking when they come to Anfield, because Liverpool tend to do better against teams who try to match them in the way of playing. They tend to do not as well if teams are sitting back, sitting deep, with less space to operate behind the back four or back five, whatever it is, right? You know what I mean, you can see like how they played against Manu in their wise, in all their wisdom, right, decided to play the same game as Liverpool. And same goes as when Liverpool played Chelsea and Man City at Anfield. The moment when Chelsea had the player sent off, right, and it was 11v10, and Chelsea just shut up shop, it was difficult for Liverpool to break through. The midfield just doesn't seem to have that level of creativity yet to unlock a packed defense that sits deep. I mean, there's always talk of, you know, Thiago being the missing link, right? But I think the missing link, unfortunately, is Harvey Elliott, who's out injured, recovering well, I must say. You know, he's walking without any braces or anything of that sort. But I don't think
former Blackburn Rovers legend, of course.
Yes. But he's nowhere near match fit until I think at least January or February next year. Yeah.
I think maybe you're right. Even someone like Naby Keita coming back provides a little bit more thrust in the Liverpool midfield, right? So someone like, what is your midfield three? I'm looking at like Fabinho, Naby Keita, and maybe, you know, if Elliot was fit, Elliot, if not Henderson, Milner, or even Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, but the key guys have to be Fabinho and Naby Keita. But in all honesty though, when I saw the lineup, I think, you know, even with Henderson in there and Oxlade-Chamberlain, I thought they looked pretty strong. Maybe fatigue played a big part.
Yeah, I think the difference that Oxlade-Chamberlain played the game in against Atletico, right? He did a lot more driving runs through the midfield towards the defense than he did against West Ham.
Yeah, and I think that's quite key, because the season when they challenged for the title before they won it, they beat, I remember, Man City in the quarterfinals, I think, of the Champions League, and he scored like a fantastic goal.
Yeah,
and right. And I think one of the headlines was like, Oxlade who, right? You know, because, you know, they're trying to mimic the fact that Pep Guardiola didn't know who he was. It's just minor tweaks here and there. I'm actually, you know, I'm still surprised that they let in 3 goals against West Ham.
But they've been letting in goals in the Premier League, strangely, right? Two games before Man U, like they drew with Man City 2-2, they drew with Brighton 2-2.
Right.
Rather the games that the Man United game was sandwiched in between, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and also I was just thinking, looking back to the championship winning season, like what, two seasons ago, I think they also started out the season similarly, where they let in a lot of goals. And I think they weren't quite settled yet. They're winning games, but you know, they're drawing 3-3, winning games, you know,
me,
3-2.
Me being the Liverpool fan, right, I'm not gonna look gift horse in the mouth. Where we were last season until we went on that massive losing streak from end of December up to, you know, January, February onwards. So anything can happen, you know, in this Premier League. Any team can go on a winning streak, any team can go on a losing streak as well.
Speaking of which, Man City weren't looking good at all. But after the 2-0 win over Manchester United, they're back up to second place. And yeah, and all of a sudden, they're there competing again. Maybe you could talk about a little bit more about that Manchester derby. Did you guys expect United to be able to win at all?
No. not at all. I didn't think that they were going to win. I thought City were excellent. They carved United up like at every opportunity, right? And I think 2-0 was actually very flattering for United. I think it could have been a lot more. In many ways, the voices against Solskjaer were just as strong, almost just as strong as the voices were after the 5-0 against Liverpool. Because I think the level of performance was just as poor But if it was another 5-0, I think, if Guardiola and his team really wanted to really focus and really put them to the sword, I think there will be some really uncomfortable questions. If there aren't really uncomfortable questions, but I think it would be almost untenable to be 5-0 in two respective games. Yeah, Man City were amazing, and this is without, you know, Raheem Sterling. And there's talks about Raheem Sterling who wants to leave because he's not getting game time from last year. Phil Foden, yet Bernardo Silva playing false everything. False 9, 8, 10, whatever false you want to call it. He was false everything, right? And he was pulling the strings, and City was supreme. So City were excellent. Pure movement. Well coached. United were none of that. They were struggling a lot. There are a couple of good chances, but overall, over the whole course of the whole thing, no complaints. The only thing that they have to say is that they have to feel lucky that they didn't concede a lot more.
Right. And I think this round of matches, it wouldn't be complete if we didn't talk about the casualties from this weekend, right? Norwich City winning their first game of the season against Brentford, who have looked to be in good form so far, started the season well. But Daniel Farke still being sacked, as well as Dean Smith as well, because, you know, they lost to Southampton 1-0. Thoughts on the dismissals, guys? Fair, not fair?
The way they got rid of Daniel Farke, right? It seems as if they've already lined up someone for that role. Because even if they won, apparently he was told that he lost the job just outside the dressing room at the end of the game, after his post-team talk with the Norwich boys. I have a feeling that they've already got someone lined up. I'll be quite interested to find out who it's going to be. I'm not surprised on the timing, be it for Norwich or Aston Villa, because now whoever's coming in, right, they've got a 2-week runway to lay down whatever they need to do with both teams moving forward.
I think there's talks of Stevie G coming in.
For Aston Villa, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see him leaving
Rangers
just yet. I don't think he's done with that project. Yeah, I don't see Stevie G taking up the Aston Villa role. I could be surprised, but who knows?
Yeah, because, you know, the temptation of just playing in the or managing in the Premier League again, right? Just coming back to do it is always so great, right? I mean, yeah, you could be managing and winning in Scotland, but if someone offers you a chance to take over a Premier League team, it might be too tempting because, you know, you're on the big stage. It's a chance for you to, you know, I think personally, for someone like, you know, Steven Gerrard too, and they're so used to competing and being like showing that they're the best, right? So he wants to come and show what he can do as well. So you're right. I think you're not, you wouldn't be surprised or you, if he takes over, but he's got a good thing going at Rangers. And again, also you have to think about maybe the pay packet. They might be able to pay him better at Aston Villa anyway. Another guy up for the job as well, I'm seeing here is John Terry. What do you think, Hata? I mean, he used to be assistant at Aston Villa anyway, right?
Yeah, he still is, I think so. I think he might be stand it for now. Wow, that's again, that's a very big jump, right? Whether he's, you know, he's been quite, what's the word? Conservative around this whole thing, because, you know, he's seen his fellow colleagues, right? Right? He's seen Lampard and Stevie G all do their thing. He's been quite conservative, but I think if I were him, it would just make sense to take it easy. Don't commit to doing this role, because, you know, you might be better off doing the role at the start of the season, right? So he has nothing to lose right now. I think if he just comes in, does a pretty decent job. Let's see where it goes, right?
I think the more likely one is what Cal suggested last week, was Lampard take over at Aston Villa with John Terry
as well, yeah,
coming in as his first team coach, as his first team assistant.
Yeah, double team again, Chelsea double team. It's hard to say. It's really, really hard to say.
Right, and another guy also in line as well is Paulo Fonseca. So of course he is also up for the Wolves job. Has Wolves found a manager yet? Not confirmed yet, right?
No.
Okay. What about Norwich? I mean, who do you think might be in place? Hyrule, you said you suspected they might have lined up someone. Do you have any idea who?
That's a pure toss-up for me, man. Although I won't be surprised if it's one of the English old guard that we dread to see back in the Premier League. One of those faces like, you know, Sam Allardyce. Neil Warnock's out of a job again. So that's another likelihood.
Yeah, I see Roy Hodgson's name up there as well.
Yeah. But is Wolves looking for a manager?
No. I think Wolves is not. You're talking about Villa and Aston Villa and
Norwich only.
Norwich,
right?
No, Aston Norwich, yeah. Norwich, not Wolves. Yeah.
All right, my apologies. Bruno Lager is still manager.
Still there.
Yeah, correct. We're talking about Spurs that time, but Antonio Conte has taken over there, of course.
I think Newcastle is the only one, but I think they're due to confirm Eddie Howe anytime.
Right. But what about, as far as Antonio Conte goes, was he in charge of the game against Everton, or was it a caretaker in place?
Yes, he was. He was in charge of the Europa Conference League game as well.
All right. So thoughts so far after first two games on his, the game against Everton was 0-0. So, you know, I guess usually the first thing managers try to do, or at least, you know, someone like Antonio Conte would try to do is basically tighten up the leaks in the back line. But what do you guys think so far? Has he got them on the right track? Do they look more settled?
I think it's been pretty bland for now. They're still in early stages, right? So I hope as an Arsenal fan they don't get going. But it's Antonio Conte, and if there's one person who would do a good job in whipping a team into shape and getting them started and moving, I think it'll be a matter of time, you know. Maybe he might take another month, but it'll be a matter of time for him to get started. But you know, people they claim that he was a bit bland in the last game, but bland is an improvement from what they've been up to this season so far. So I think he'll be a good appointment for them. But I think he might need about another month. Don't forget, you know, when he first took over Chelsea, he was still finding a formula within the first several weeks, right? I think after one game where they got kind of smacked by Arsenal, that's when they move away from the back four into a back three, and then they never look back since. So, you know, you should never rule out Antonio Conte. And yeah, he's a great coach. And I think he'll coach the team really, really well.
Yeah, I think a good point. And what about Liverpool? Not Liverpool. What about Everton, Hyrule? Since, you know, you look across the other side of Merseyside, and, you know, Rafael Benitez hasn't really been getting the most out of his team. This time around, 0-0 draw, but they got Mason Holgate sent off, although after coming on as a substitute. Do you think he might be the next in line in terms of managerial casualties this season?
No, I think he's got two more games. I think one game, and then after that, it's the Merseyside derby at Goodison Park. But he's got quite a fairly lengthy injury list. Richarlison just came back, but he hardly looked match fit yesterday. And I mean, you're missing players like key players like Dominic Calvert-Lewin, right? Players like Gylfie Sigurdsson is out for other off-pitch reasons, of course. Players like in defense, you're missing Yerry Mina. Andre Gomez is out. I don't think he's got his ideal squad there. I mean, the first 11 at Everton is quite impressive. I mean, you're missing players like Doucouré. I think these players would definitely make a difference if he had them. Benitez, being who he is, right, I'm sure he can grind out no score draws easily. I mean, that's his trade when he was at Newcastle, right? With limited resources, he will get you that no score draws. But to get the wins, I don't see where the goals are going to come from. Misfiring Richarlison is hardly match fit. Solomon Rondon is not going to cut it. Yeah, that's going to be a big issue for them up front. Demarai Gray, he's lost a bit of the that magic that he had early on in the season, right? When everyone thought he was such a good buy, getting in for such a very cut price from the Bundesliga. But he seems to be going off his rails a little bit. But yeah, I think they need to get the players back. But I don't think his job is in any risk at this point in time. But then again, you know, this is silly season for the managers, right? I don't know. I mean, Hatta, even who do you guys think is going to be next?
Wow. I'm not sure about sackings. But I think Benitez has a pretty thankless task because, you know, he hasn't been welcomed by the fans from day one. I think they don't really appreciate him. So he might be an easy target the moment he starts having a bit of a slide. In terms of who's next, I think it's only a cat. Are his nine lives up already? I don't know. I mean, he has been the one getting flagged, right? But I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Well, he's been getting the dreaded, you know, vote of confidence from the board, right?
For him, it's really a vote of confidence. Right. You know, I mean, let's not. For him, it is really vote of confidence. It's a really vote of confidence. It's hard. I mean, Watford, you just never know, right?
Right. Although they just hired Ranieri, right?
So, you never know. Yeah. They could let him go. Leeds haven't been doing well.
Yeah.
For their lofty standards.
Yes.
So you don't know. I think Bielsa is more of a very he's a man of honor. So if it still continues languishing at this, you know, maybe he might throw in the letter. You just don't know. But I think that there are no obvious candidates right now, besides Ole. Like, if you let Ole go, who are you going to bring in, right? Conte's gone.
Yeah.
Are you going to get Ten Hag from Ajax?
Think, you know, some depends. I think they have to be very careful right now because, to be honest, I was surprised that they let Dean Smith go so soon because we were just talking about it last week.
Yeah.
And they're not even in the relegation zone yet. I mean, they've had five losses in a row, at least, but you know, teams have ups, have downs, they have streaks of form. So, you know, just to sack this guy who brought them all the way up from the championship two seasons ago, did very well for them last year. Of course, they lost Jack Grealish, brought in players, but I think that might have been the reason why he brought in a lot of players to strengthen the team, and then they're performing a lot less well than expected.
Yeah, it's all down to the expectations.
You know. And I think also, you know, the likes of Leicester City with Brendan Rodgers, who's to say, right? You know, after international break, they lose another 3-4 games and, you know, they're closer to the relegation zone or even in the relegation zone, he might be asked to leave. You know, even the likes of Crystal Palace, I mean, they performed well, but if you look at their record, it's 3 wins only, right? 6 draws and 2 losses. That number could change, you know, very quickly. You know, in a couple of games, it could be 3, 6, 5 losses, right, soon. And they might consider letting him go. I mean, even Brighton and Hove Albion doing well so far, but you never know, right? I think so far, I think maybe no one else is going to be axed soon. But I think you never know. I mean, even like you said, United, right? If Ole somehow doesn't pull out the wins he's expected to. I mean, so far, every time he's needs a result, he provides one. The previous one was Liverpool losing 5-0, came back, won in the Champions League. No, they won. They won in the Champions League, and then they won over in the Premier League, drew against Atlanta after, you know, almost losing. So had a so decent. And then after that, they lost again to City. So yeah, you never know. All he needs to do is just lose 2 or 3 more games in a row and his head might roll.
I think that's down to whether who's available
also
in the market. Yeah. For some reason, Pochettino leaves PSG, yes, right? You might see him propping up at Old Trafford after that.
Yeah, you never know, right?
What a change of events. Like, you would think Pochettino goes back to Spurs and then Conte goes to... but... You just never know.
Yeah,
he'll be a good option for them for sure.
then we just see Ole pulling out the wins out of his hat until Pochettino gets hired by someone, right?
Yeah. And then after that, he loses again. And then after that, no one's available. Yeah. Anyway, guys, I wanted to ask you guys also about a couple of things, a couple of results in La Liga. I mean, just to continue on the thread where Atletico Madrid lost to Liverpool, they sort of struggled again to a 3-3 draw against Valencia. And now they are, how many points? They're in fourth place, but they're 5 points off the leaders, Real Sociedad, who have played a game more. What do you think? Is it, the turning point for Atletico Madrid here? Because they look like they're struggling now, even in La Liga.
It's hard to say, you know. It's been a very unconvincing, you know, all the options that you have are pretty unconvincing, right? Even Real Madrid, who are able to grind out something, they're not fantastic. I mean, they have the Benzema, who could pull something out. And Vinicius, who is playing really, really well, individual brilliance, and then they have a kind of a solid team to lean against, right? But yeah, it's really hard to say who could really move forward, because Atletico have the quality. I think for the first time in a long time, you could say that they have more quality overall versus the other two, right. But they're struggling to find a formula that works consistently. It's really interesting because there are no big outright winners. So I would be interested to see, because very easily Real Madrid could falter down the line. Very easily Barcelona could flip around and come back and under Xavi and find their form again, because they've got some good talent in their team. So it's very unpredictable, but I like it that way.
Yeah. And speaking of Barcelona, they were up 3-0 against
Embarrassing.
Then, you know, escaped with 3-3 draw.
Yeah. And the last, I think it was like 95th minute.
Yeah, the last kick of the game. Liverpool legend Iago Aspas scored his second goal to run away with the draw. Do you think, Hyrule, that Xavi is the right fit for them? Is he, I mean, does he have enough of the top level managerial experience?
He knows the Barcelona ethic, right? He knows what Barcelona should be playing, how they should be playing. And he also knows what sort of players are required to play at Barcelona, what the skill sets they require. I think he came out with a statement to say that Luke de Jong is not the kind of player they're looking for, right? I think he's already been put on the transfer list. Or
He's a loan, right? He's a loan player, so I think
He might be heading back
maybe faster than he expects.
Yeah, that's where Barcelona is right now, right? They need these sorts of harsh realities to pull them up, kicking and screaming up the league table, but. To be honest, I don't think they're ready yet. There's still a lot that needs to be done. The way that Xavi wants Barcelona to play, like how his Al Sadd team was playing, right? A lot of coaching is necessary. And I'm not sure, you know, how much of that coaching is similar to what Ronald Koeman was doing based on results. I think very little similarities there. I don't see them challenging for the title anytime soon. I think they'd be very lucky looking at how the rest of the league is performing, right? Look at how Real Sociedad is doing. Look at how Sevilla is doing. They're tight with Real Madrid on points with one game in hand behind Sociedad. All of these could just, you know, run away from Barcelona as they're trying to play catch up, you know, and control their internal issues. They'll be lucky to qualify for Europe for the Champions League for next season. So I think that's what they should at least try and focus on. Forget about the La Liga title.
Right. And I think if you look at the likes of Real Madrid, they might have a bunch of older guys, older stars. But, you know, if they perform, you know, they can still be quality players. And Karim Benzema hasn't stopped scoring. That's the amazing thing. And I think maybe the ace up their sleeve is the coach, Carlo Ancelotti, because, you know, he's a top-class coach. You know, he can get what he wants from the players. And I think when it comes down to it, I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Atletico Madrid and how Diego Simeone, you know, gets the most out of his guys. But sometimes when it comes to just the league and just, you know, just taking it to the next level.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just seems like he's always missing just a little bit.
You know? What you have in Carlo Ancelotti, right, is a man manager. He knows how to manage top-class players and let them do their thing, which is why things didn't really work out for him at Everton, because that team really needed proper coaching. So
it worked out for him for like, what, maybe half a season? And then...
That's why things worked out for him at Bayern Munich, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those players don't need real coaching. They just need managing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think what you get with Diego Simeone is, you know, you get that he's a full-on style coach, right? So he's managing you all the way till, you know, to every kick you make on the pitch, right? So, but yeah. Oh, I just wanted to mention, it was kind of interesting against Liverpool last week that Diego Simeone really had zero energy. And none of the energy that you usually see of him, you know, running, usually is like running into the dressing room at halftime and like, you know, and of course everyone was watching for them to, for him to shake Jurgen Klopp's hand at the final whistle. Of course it didn't happen, but yeah, you know, I just thought it was just funny to kind of see a guy who's always like 200% energy just be, you know, 20% energy that night. Elsewhere, what about Serie A? How do you guys see that going so far? I mean, Napoli are on top, so are AC Milan. But the rest, you know, Inter Milan, 7 points behind. Atalanta struggling, you know, on 22 points. So they're 10 points behind both Napoli and AC Milan. Do you think AC Milan's time to win the league? Although it's kind of weird because I think if you watch them in the Champions League, they don't seem to be performing up to that standard. But it seems okay when they're in Serie A.
It's been interesting, you know, the Serie A standings right now. We were just talking about it offline. Milan and Napoli are doing really well, and I hope that these two can be the guys who push them all the way. Inter as well has been, you know, have been performing quite well. They are 7 points from the top though, but it'll be fascinating to see these three guys fighting for it. The Milan derby over the weekend was also, for me, excellent. You know, there were missed penalties. It had everything you want in a derby, except maybe red cards and a bit of fight. But it was a game that was really interesting. This Milan team is also quite fascinating because it's a very young team. It's dynamic. It moves fast. And it has some older hits like Ibra and Giroud. But for the most part, they have Tomori and, you know, all these young players. So, I hope Milan can go really far, and I hope Napoli can do something. I mean, they've been, you know, especially under Maurizio Sarri, they've been in and about, you know, challenging from the outside and trying to push as far as they can. And now that actually there's not that much, you know, eyes on them, they're actually going pretty far, and I hope they can go as far as possible. It's quite refreshing to see Juve outside the pack.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah, but I think that's good for the league because, you know, once in a while, you can't have one guy winning it all every season. So,
yeah
I'm really excited. I'm really excited, yeah.
What about you, Haru? Like, AC Milan back on top, it'll be like the 80s and 90s all over again?
True, but they don't play like the team from the 80s and the 90s, unfortunately. but I think what needs to be emphasizes how far the Serie A has fallen with respect to the other European leagues. I mean, you have the top teams running away with the Serie A right now, or seem to have run away with the Serie A in Napoli and AC Milan. But AC Milan is struggling in the Champions League group of their own. Although it is supposed to be the group of death, but they're fourth in a team that has Liverpool, Atletico Madrid and Porto. So, in that respect, right, Serie A has sort of fallen in terms of overall league strength.
But it's strange though, right? Then they go to a European Championship and then they win it. Although, well, you know...
I have quite a soft spot for Serie A. I think the quality is pretty good. But right. they do struggle to translate to Europe for some reason. They are excellent players, great tactics, great strategy. But someone in a European, you know, club competition, they kind of struggle. I don't think they're as bad as what we think they are. I think they're pretty good. You know, I think these teams are pretty good. It's just they're still finding their way around. Yeah.
The fact that we don't get very much of Italian football nowadays, we don't get to watch it a lot. And when we do watch it, it looks a lot slower than what we're used to, because we're always like, you know, high octane EPL, you know, matches with like crazy commentary from pundits, you know.
But I think they are quite offensive. They do post like quite a high number of goals, and I think they just struggle to keep up with the pace a little bit. But if you watch a lot of their highlights, you watch some of their games, it's faster than you think. But somehow I think tactically or quality wise, they just kind of struggle to translate that in Europe, and especially a team like Inter, which usually has quite a lot of talents, you know, under Conte and all that, they've been struggling for sure. They are a bit unlucky sometimes, but it's been quite interesting to find out why they're struggling. But I think they've got more than enough quality in Serie A to challenge most teams, I'm sure.
All right, I think that covers pretty much the main things for the main leagues and the main results from this week. Hyrule, anything else that you want to discuss?
No, I think we've talked quite at length about all the leagues, and you know, it's quite a heavy podcast, so to speak, for our listeners to digest, you know, in this 2-week break that we have, international break until club football resumes, right? Because most of us are keeping our fingers crossed that our favorite players are not injured on international duty.
Right.
I think Pochettino is currently fuming because Messi, even though he's injured, has been called up by Argentina. That's
of course.
And then in Singapore as well, I think we've got news that on-field play will soon resume.
Right.
Hatta, does that mean boot reviews are going to come back?
I mean, they have been back, but they've just been through to training, right?
First-person reviews.
Hopefully, but they are quite limited, though. I mean, they are quite limited. I've seen some of the terms. They are quite limited to 5-a-side and no changes of teams, which is fine, because I was doing some of my reviews 4-a-side with no changes, right? But they're also limited to government-specific locations. So I think some of the Sports SG, Active SG locations, and you got to do a test on the spot as well. So it's pretty stringent. I've had friends...
And be vaccinated also,
And vaccinated, yes. I've had friends talking about it today, saying that, you know what, their friends in Malaysia, now VTL is opening up in Malaysia, they would travel to Malaysia for a short holiday and play 11-a-side there and get the 11-a-side fixed in Malaysia.
Maybe we can organize, you know, football tours to Malaysia, you know.
That'd be fantastic, right? So you, on one hand, you get people who are excited, and then the other hand, they say, you know, VTL, I'm going to go big, right? Go 11 aside. Let's go and make my time with it. So
I guess that's all we have for the Premier Football podcast for this week. Any last words from you guys, Ewan?
No, not much. Not really looking forward to another international weekend, but, you know, always happy for the football that comes back after it. Be interesting to pick up on the story threads that have been woven for this week and see where they hit. So yeah, that's all for me.
And Hata?
I'm quite excited for next week, because next week should be our next episode, should be our 50th.
Yes.
Oh yes, yes.
Yes, yes. So
we haven't decided how to make
don't
it.
Tell them that,
one.
Don't tell them that. No. I'm excited for what we're planning.
So look out for that. Maybe we'll do some teasers as we lead up to it.
Cool.
So anyway, that's all from me signing off for this week's episode. Catch up with you guys in our special 50th episode next week. So talk to you guys again. Ciao, guys.
Hey, man. Cheers.
Bye.